Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastamavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay. Unless otherwise noted, the text from the study guide and the Sanskrit headings for each adhikarna drawn from Baladev Vidyabhushan's Govindabhashya. However, these first four sutras will also feature explanations by Srila Jiva Goswami. Sutra 111. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Commentary by Jiva Goswami. Srila Jiva Goswami sheds light on this opening sutra, Vedanta Sutra, in his Chatushruti Tika, located at the end of the Paramatma Sandarbha. He shows what a Bhagavat-based commentary on Vedanta Sutra would look by comparing the two works in detail. He specifically demonstrates how rival philosophies, impersonalism and karmakanda, are refuted in the first verse of either work. In the Garuda Purana, it is said, Arto yam Brahma Sutra nam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the perfect commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Thus, the Garuda Mahapurana confirms that Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. In this way, the second half of Srimad Bhagavatam's first verse, 111, is the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra's first aphorism, 111. So, in other words, what the Vedanta Sutra gives, that is the conclusions, is the same as what Srimad Bhagavatam gives. So that's the whole point, is that the Vedanta Sutra commentary by Baladev Vidyabhushan and the Tattvasandarbhas, you know, is their analyzation of the how you say the Upanishad is the same. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. So either way you look at it, from Srimad Bhagavatam's perspective or from Vedanta Sutra's perspective, you'll get the same conclusion.
Alright.
Yes.
For example, Shankar, when he did his Bhashya, he took different conclusion?
He's basically just proving Buddhism through Vedic literature. Like that. Because he's trying to get the Buddhists to go from being Gnostics to Astics. That they're accepting the Vedic version as opposed to rejecting it. Right. So you can, you know, it's very hard to do two things at once, right? And so the foundation of it, that's what he switched. He started with that whole, you know, the authority, the whole religion and everything. He did that first, because that one, it's like this. Followers of the Vedic culture, they all have that point as common, right? What's different is their philosophy, right? How they interpret the verses for the ultimate. So, therefore, you have karmis, you have jnanis, you have bhaktas. They're all following the same culture, the same, right? But what happens is their conclusion on what's the ultimate is different, right? So, therefore, it will be easier to make them into Hindus than it will to make them into Vaishnavas. So he took them from atheists, made them into Hindus, and then Ramanuja and Madhva made them into Vaishnavas. Right? And then having come to that platform of Vaishnava, then with Lord Chaitanya coming, then you can understand this, you know, supreme subtlety of the Vaishnava tradition. Is that so? So it's a natural progression.
Okay.
Because the hardest thing is to, you know, achinta beda beda tattva, that in one sense would be harder than the culture. Just like we were saying before, the difficulty comes is when one takes up practicing Krishna conscious, one accepts the culture, but then he thinks that itself is the Krishna conscious rather than that's the form that you use to apply the Krishna consciousness. You know what I'm saying? Like the, you know, enthusiast thinks having all the fancy pots and pans, that is cooking. No, that's just, you know, it's nice, it's good. It's what you would want to do good cooking, but cooking's something else. You know what I'm saying? You know, that's the whole thing. Those who are new at the thing, they always focus on the secondary and then think because they have that, the primary is automatic. No, if you have the primary, then engagement with the secondary is automatic. But it's not the other way around. It's as a logic, it's weak, right? Because if you want to use something to it properly in the syllogism, it has to be able to go both ways, right? A equals B, but B also has to equal A, right? B equals C, C has to equal B. Then you can say A equals C, right? But if it's one way but not the other, like where there's smoke, there's fire. But where there's fire, there doesn't have to be smoke. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is it goes only one way, it doesn't go two.
Yes, sir. The negative goes the other way. There's no fire, there's no smoke.
Yes, yes. So where there's no fire, there's no smoke. Right. So then the thing, it has to be... All aspects have to be good. That's what logic's for. That's why then the Vedanta is presented in that logical fashion so that it's exact. You understand? So that secondary, on one level, is easier to comprehend, right? Because of conditioning. On the platform of the soul, it's actually easier to comprehend the other, the philosophy. Does that make sense? So then, yeah.
Right.
Yes.
It seems that the Prabhupada used somewhat of a similar tactic. In the beginning, he established the culture of chanting and taking prasadam.
Yes.
And gradually everything else.
As it comes, yes. You just, whichever will work at the time. But the point is, you're trying to get all of it. You know, as we were discussing this morning, some have the ideas, oh, we just chant Hare Krishna, why do we even focus on anything else? But then that comes up, that's basically based on Sahajya. You know, also Buddhism. Right, it's that we don't need all that, we just stick to the essential because we feel we're so advanced. But it's false ego that we say, oh, we don't need all that. It's kind of like, who's we? Yeah. He is the we. Like that. You know, or let's say... just another example of we here. What was his name? Bhugarbha Goswami. You know, in Vrindavan, when you go to Radha Damodar, when you go around, then you kind of have to go out of your way into that little kind of like niche to go around the samadhi. That's his samadhi. So he was, you know, famous amongst the Goswamis for kind of having bug eyes. I don't know, it's an English-American term. But it means your eyes are always really wide open. You know, really big, round eyes. He was always like that. Because he never slept. The Goswamis might sleep an hour and a half a night, or they might forget. He just didn't sleep. So his eyes are always big like this, and so then when they talk, and you know, he just didn't sleep. So, so that's another week. But other than that, then we all need the Veda culture. Basically, as soon as one, you're using the Veda culture in a very light way, if one's living a full-time temple life, right, as a brahmacharya. As soon as you add grihastha, if it's in the temple environment, it's extended a little bit. But as soon as one shifts from the temple life outside the community, that's why if you don't bring in the wider range of the Veda culture, how do you engage it? Because you're staying in a room in the temple. Right? Is it your room? No, it belongs to the temple. All the activities you do, it all belongs to the temple. Everything belongs to the temple. All the authorities, temple, everything's temple. But when you move outside, then it's your house, it's your money, it's your family. You know, then the authority is actually, there's this whole other line. You have your boss, you have the local government, you have all these other things. So if you don't know aspects of the Vedic culture to connect them, then how will they? How are you going to say they're the same? Point is the temple life, you can say temple life and community life are the same. Yes, as long as you're fully connected. If you don't fully connect it, then the other ones, the brahmachari is automatically connected whether he's conscious or not. He's conscious, better. He's not conscious, it's still connected. But for the community member, if they connect it, they're connected. They don't connect it, it's not. So you can't say they're the same. Right? In the form, in the religious aspect. So if that's accepted, then you deal with the religious aspect, you know, that's appropriate. Mm-hmm. Don't try to use the philosophical to therefore throw out the other. You know, you can't use the philosophical to say it doesn't matter, so you throw out the Vedic and then insist on non-Vedic.
Very logical.
Yeah, it's very logical. So the whole point is if it doesn't matter, then why would you use any of it? Then you would just stick to, you know, Trinada Pisuni Chenan, just deal with everybody nicely and not worry about anything else.
Different tree every night.
Yeah, then fine. Then we don't mind. You know, not many people can follow you. You know, I remember once we were at this inn. When you go up to Muktinath, then there's the inns that the locals stay in, and then there's this whole other parallel system of inns that tourists stay at. I didn't know they existed. I only knew the local ones. And so, but on the way back, then we stayed in an inn. We hit one inn. There's, you know, generally you go to an inn, there's nobody there, one or two people are there, there's a few beds, and it's really, really simple and small. You're like staying in an extra room in somebody's house. Mm-hmm. But these other things, they're actually the whole things. It's like the whole thing is for the tourists, and then the people that run it probably have a little room or something. So coming back, then there's suddenly this place got like 50 people in it, you know? And up there it's cold and all that. And so then we were eating, but then where we were was next to the door, so, you know, the door was closed, but it's still cold. So as the sun goes down, it gets dark. It gets colder. So I was explaining, they were asking questions on philosophy and that, and I was discussing. But what I was noticing is they're getting cold, and I was starting to shiver like that. And at one point, I guess it was so strong that the people I was talking to, it says this, you know, their kind of thing was, is if you don't care about if you're cold or not, that's freaky to us. We can't get into this. You know, we have to, you know, we're cold, we got to cover up. But if your philosophy or your religion is you get cold, you don't deal with it. Says we can't do this. You know, so then, you know, you put on your chadar and then you continue the conversation. It just says, just so absorbed, yes. You know. So the problem comes is that's why the religion is there. Because the philosophy accommodates everyone because everybody is soul. So there is no difference between souls. It means there's uniqueness of personality. But as far as the nature of Brahman, they're all the same. Exactly. It's not that there's different grades of souls on that platform. Right? But when it comes to conditioning, then the souls, there are different grades. So the Vedic system can deal with all those grades, from ignorance, passion, to goodness. While in the modern, they can only deal with, you know, a particular perspective, blend or particular, you know, exact thing. You know, it's got to be a certain amount of goodness, a certain amount of, you know, like you have I don't think you have them anymore, but the flower children, particular group of hippies, they didn't own anything, everything's nice, they shared everything, just everything was cool, like that. They only lasted, I think, for the year of 60, I think up to 68.
They ran out of things to share?
They ran out of things to share, or things like that, or something, you know, like that.
They will accidentally have a bath one day.
Yeah, that was it, the culture was gone, that was it. They were, yeah. So, yeah, well, there were too many people to share the bathtub. So it's like, oh no, how do we share? You know, so whatever. itself. You know, everything went out the window. So the you know, so therefore it's like extremely on that speculative, but it, like goodness, then passion, yeah, there's guys that drive there, guys in ignorance, or guys in passion and ignorance, or passion and goodness, or so the Vedic culture can accommodate that. Because the nature between a Brahmin, a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, and a Shudra are all very different. But at the same time, is if you're following the Vedic system, then they all have common ground. That's the whole thing, is they can all be very different, but at the same time they can all interact with each other. Mm-hmm. That's as beautiful as the Vedic system. The modern system doesn't have that. You know, you're from an aristocracy, it means that, you know, you don't even want to get the common people in the bottom of your shoe. You know, it's kind of like, oh, you know, what's that smell? It says, oh no, I got a commoner on the bottom of my shoe. You know, call the...
bringing new shoes.
Yeah, yeah, bringing new shoes, you know, throw those out. You know, it's like, oh no. Yeah, so it's just, it's a problem. So the Vedic is the only one that can accommodate that, because what's common is the higher principles and qualities. And what's different is the environments in that which they apply it. So therefore, let's say if respectful towards others is the principle, someone's going to be respectful on a very elaborate and ornamental style with someone else in a very simple style. You go into the guy's house and goes around and, you know, takes his cloth, kind of brushes the floor, puts down a mat, and that's it. Well, in the other places, I remember we went to this one place in guy's house in Calcutta. You know, it's like you go by Calcutta, right? Everything looks run down and everything like that. You go into this guy's house, you could probably say the entrance to walk into the house was probably, you know, two-thirds the width of this, but about equally that long. Huge, these, you know, Chinese, like, big vases and, you know, real stuff. All kinds of far-out things. Then you go into the kind of, like, I guess it's the, would be where they entertain guests and probably they hang out themselves, but it wasn't formal. It wasn't dining room and this. And you look out in the backyard. Backyard is monstrous. Huge. This is right in Calcutta. Huge gardens, big, huge thing. But from the road that you go down, everything looks run down. Right? Huge thing. So it's just myself. I think there's one other devotee and this gentleman that we were talking. And at one time then they brought, you know, something, some refreshment. So there's, I think it's some juice. You know, you have to serve it in a solid silver cup. Pomegranate juice, right? You know, you wouldn't want to do something else. And some sandesh. So then, you know, we've eaten that and eaten sandesh. And so then the servant comes in if we want any more. He brings this tray of sandesh, huge thing. There's probably 200 pieces of sandesh on that tray. I'm not joking. You know? To see if you want, you know, one more. It's just, you know, the way they work to impress, to, you know, just... You know, you don't, because if you come out with two or three, then you don't want to take because you don't know who else is there, maybe family members, this and that. But if there's 200, you know that it's way more than enough. Servants are going to be taking home 10 each, you know, if not more, you know. So that you're comfortable to take. So you have that down to, you know, the person who comes in and, like you said, like that, and you sit on the little bamboo kind of made bed. You know, and that, and they're all trying. But the mood is exactly the same because it's based on higher principles. Therefore, all the secondary can match. That's the beauty. The principle is one, but the manifestation of the principle, that's what's many. So the Vedic principle, because Vedic culture, the Brahminical culture, because it's based on principles. Therefore, it can handle a wide range. So we can accommodate the people in pants. The problem is the people in pants can't accommodate those who are wearing, you know, the Vedic dress. So because they're working on the secondary, and they're taking that as the problem. You know, so we chant Hare Krishna becomes a secondary rather than a primary. So that's why the analyzation is there, so we can tell the difference. We can understand when we are dealing with primary, when we are dealing with secondary, what kind of secondary are we dealing with? Or whether in this situation we use this primary, or in that situation we do another primary. You know, because otherwise it keeps adjusting. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes. Is that good? Okay. Okay. So we have a tato Brahma Jigyasa, right? So now they're breaking down. So on Brahma, then this is the first discussion, right? Here, the first word of Vedanta Sutra, now therefore one should inquire about Brahman, are explained by the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, where it is said, Parama Dhimahi, which means I meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? So because we're defining Brahma. So what is that Brahman? So then from Bhagavatam, then we understand that Brahman is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the Brahman we're talking about. Right? The word Brahma in Vedanta Sutra 111 means the greatest. Brahman is like the sun, and everything that exists is like rays of light emanating from the Brahman sun. Therefore, the word Param, Srimad Bhagavatam 111, explains the true meaning of the word Brahma in Vedanta Sutra 111. The word Param means the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The conclusion then is that variety less than personal Brahman is one aspect of the Supreme Person, Paramatma Sandarbha 105, 9 through 12. Right? In other words, if it's the Supreme, like it mentions here, what's it? The greatest. So now Brahman is the greatest, but greater than the greatest is, how you say it? Paramatma, and then greater than that, Bhagavan. So that means the topmost element of Brahman is Bhagavan. So now that's why it's the natural commentary, because Vedanta Sutra is the authority. But the point is to understand that authority, then, therefore, Vyasa's Srimad Bhagavatam. Because it's the final work that's written. He's already written this before. Right? And then concluding, he wrote Mahabharata. But as pointed out by Narad Muni, that doesn't actually conclude it. Because Vedanta, it has to be on the end there. Well, how he's presented it, it's more kind of on the cultural and things like that. Not that it's a problem. But it's not totally about Krishna consciousness. But Bhagavatam is totally about Krishna consciousness. So it's a match for, it's fully transcendental. Well, you can say Mahabharata is transcendental 25% of the time. When it's talking about the Lord and the Pandavas, then it's transcendental. But when it's talking about all kinds of other things, it's all the culture that supports that transcendental. But the problem is people won't make the difference, distinction. While in Bhagavatam, then those same things are presented, but from the transcendental platform. Right? We see that the great personalities in the last cantos, you know, grihasthas and kings and that, all the different things that they're doing, you know, how they're dealing with the family, how they're dealing, like it gets down to detail how Priyavrata interacted with his wife, the mood, you know, or Bharat Maharaj, or how he dealt with his sons, or like that. It may only give one example, but the point is it's the principle. You take it from there and apply it. So it's been covered. And then you want further detail, then, you know, you have other works are there. Manu tells exact relationships, so all these other things tell. Right? Mahabharata, then there you'll see more detail in how they interacted. So that all supports. But the point is as the Vedic literature, its end is the Upanishads, and the essence of that is given in the Vedanta Sutra. So therefore, in Puranic form, to understand the whole of the Veda in its essence is Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's what Jiva Goswami shows. They exactly match. And you see is that the Bhagavatam does give the further understanding. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, so you have to be very clear is that Brahma here means the Supreme, and of that means the Supreme Personality of God. Because if you have the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you have Paramatma and Brahman. That you only understand Brahman doesn't mean that you have approached Paramatma and Bhagavan. So, yeah.
Yes. Upanishads would deal with Brahman mainly?
Yes. The point is because it's Brahma Sutras, is that it always goes to the principle of Brahman. So that gives it its more wide acceptance. Right? Because then any aspect of Brahman that you're dealing with, then one can accept it. But Bhagavatam being the natural commentary then shows that actually what it means, Brahman, means the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you understand him, you'll understand all these other schools of Brahman. Right? You know, it's just like we can understand Krishna and Vaikuntha. For us, it's like, oh, Krishna's in Vrindavan. And so, therefore, we have a problem with Krishna in Vaikuntha. Right? But we don't have a problem. But some on the Vaikuntha level, they'll have a bit of a problem. You know, it depends on the individuals. We mentioned the three kinds of Vaikuntha Vasis. Those who are, you know, situated nicely in their own rasa can't really accommodate anything outside of that, anything different than that. Those that are situated nicely in their rasa can accommodate others, but it's not that they appreciate, just they can accommodate. Right? So the first level can't accommodate, can't appreciate. The second level can accommodate, doesn't appreciate. The third level accommodates and appreciates. So Narad Muni's in that third. He appreciates what the gopis are doing. Bhishma Dev appreciates what the Brajvasis are doing. Is that? Yeah.
So can we say a little bit further that Shruti Prasthan would be dealing basically with Brahman, and then Smriti Prasthan as Srimad Bhagavatam would deal with Bhagavan?
They're all dealing with. See, that's the thing, is that the Vedanta is revealing what the Vedas are talking about. Just that they use a language. You know, it would be like, let's say, you explain Krishna conscious philosophy with haiku. Does that make sense? Haiku, it's a Japanese form of poetry that's not actually poetic at all, but whatever it is, it's like, you know, to emphasize something, you can use a sentence, you break it up into its parts, and how you want to emphasize it and break it up. You put it in lines down. Probably because Japanese goes down, so it works very nicely in Japanese. They don't realize in English that it would have been a sentence in English, right? Like that. Or, you know, limericks.
Once was a man from Braj.
Yes. Yes. He had faith and therefore would not budge. Okay. You understand? You can use it to explain. So Vedanta Sutra is using Nyaya as the medium. But the problem with Nyaya, because it's so succinct, the sutras, even though it's talking about the personality of Godhead, you may not catch that because of the words used. So that's why Bhagavatam is a natural commentary, because it naturally explains things. The first verse here is three words, but the first verse of Bhagavatam is quite a big verse. Yeah. Is that the same? So because it gives a fuller explanation. So that first verse there matches the first verse here. But it gives the full explanation. In fact, I think Jiva Goswami, in his commentary on the first verse in his Bhagavatam commentary, then he breaks it down into syllables, you know, one syllables, you know, and shows how it's in a chronological order all of Krishna's pastimes, from his appearance to, you know, through all his pastimes, you know, and stuff like that. He does, you know, far outside. So that's actually the essence. This is a person. It's just the language being used. You know? That's it. Yes?
There's also that aspect that the Shabda Brahman may not differ from Krishna, then depending on the approach the living entity has towards the scripture, then the particular aspect of that absolute truth it represents reveals itself to the student of the Vedic literature. Just like when Krishna entered the arena, then everybody perceived him in a different way, as Bhagavatam explains, depending on the relationship. So Kamsa saw him as death personified.
Yes.
So Shabda Brahman is the same depending on the student, and they perceive certain things in the Vedas, okay. The relationship with the scripture.
Yeah, so here it's like presented so scholars appreciate it. You know? So Bhagavatam is more of a broad, As you see, you know, as far as scholars go, he's presented, you know, he is the scholar. And so he appreciates. It's but the same, so but he can explain Vedanta Sutra. So Baladev's explained it, and then he shows the connection. So is that, so we're all clear on that? So it's not that it's a different literature, it's the same points in philosophy. The difference being is just the medium that is presented. One is told in the history form, the other one is told in intellectual form. That's all. But otherwise, it's the same thing. You know, it's like the medical journal and all that that go on for like, you know, one paragraph explaining that, and then you turn to the doctor and says, "What does that mean?" And he says, "You have a cold." You know. No. Yeah. So that's the whole idea, is that it's just the language that's used. So you're just showing that it's the same thing. Yeah. So jigyasa. The word jigyasa, one should inquire, in the beginning of Vedanta Sutra, is explained by the word dhimahi, I meditate, in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam. That means that one who is eager to understand the Supreme will always think of him. In this way, one meditates on the Supreme. Right? So jigyasa, one should inquire into the Supreme. How is that inquiry done? By constantly remembering the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? So, this is, we can see, is that when it says hearing, chanting, remembering, this is the top thing. We can see this is, that's how it'll work. Why do you hear and chant? Because you remember. Right? By hearing and chanting, you remember. So, it's a natural, it nourishes itself. So, we're just saying, oh yeah, you know, okay, Shravana Kirtan, we've heard all that. Let's move on to something more advanced. No, we don't understand how advanced it is. The Prabhupada is telling us that you have these nine processes that's already giving essence, and then out of that, then hearing and chanting, then you know, the main, then that's even more. We just think, okay, nice, but we don't understand that this is actually dealing on the topmost intellectual level that there is in the universe. But because it's given so easily, that's the nature of a master. They can do something so easily that you mistake it, that it's not a big deal. You know? Somebody does something so well, you think, oh, I can do that. And then when you try, you can't. Right? So this is actually, so in this, we'll actually appreciate how all these really technical things that most intellectual people, it requires to deal with on the intellectual platform from that side, is actually just what every day we're talking about in Bhagavatam class and in Prabhupada's purports and the Acharyas are mentioning. So that's the thing. It's really simple. So as we approach this, it's really intellectual, but at the same time, it's really, really simple. Yes?
It's really village level simple, because village is all about gossip. Gossip is hearing and chanting.
Okay, yes.
The topic of gossip.
Yeah, so, and therefore, Braj is a village, right? Okay. Yeah, so. Yes. In the opinion of Ramanujacharya, the word dhimahi, I meditate, is used in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam to explain the meaning of the word jigyasa, should be inquired about, in the beginning of Vedanta Sutra. In this way, he accepts that Srimad Bhagavatam is the best of all Vedic scriptures. Because right? The Vedanta Sutra is your end of philosophical discussion, and he's showing how these words connect there. So then he's accepting like this. And so that's the point, is there's only one opinion amongst the Vaishnavas. They may be bringing out different aspects for different, you know, environments, but their understanding of the philosophy is one. So this idea is, oh, we don't need all this and that. The point is, that means one's not thinking in the same way. One's seeing duality. Right there. Yeah.
Between jigyasa and dhimahi, which goes first?
First means?
Is the meditation first and then the inquiry, or the inquiry first and then the inquiry?
No, what he's pointing out is the inquiry means the meditation on the Lord. If you're going to inquire about something, you have to think about it. How do you inquire about it? It means just like this. Unless you think about something, then only a question comes up. If you don't think, no question comes up. That's why we're making the difference here on where inquiry means where you're going to apply. So that was the difference between the jnani and the jigyasu. Right? The jigyasu, it just sounds interesting. You know? But also someone who gossips, they're only looking for what's interesting. Right? You know, the journalist, it's only what will be interesting. No one's actually trying to find out the absolute truth. Right? So that means, because from your submissive inquiry, you're going to apply it. Right? So you want to know, you inquire, you apply. They go together. So the point is if you're meditating on something, that means you're situated in the position of manana, so you're applying it. Right? So I'll meditate on it, then I'll try to apply this way, then I see the result. Is it in line with what, you know, is the inquiry is about? Then if it is, I continue that. If it's not, I contemplate more, then I adjust it, and then like that you move forward. Does that make sense? So that's what he's meaning here. Jigyasa, then it means, so far we have meditate on the Supreme. Right? Instead of just, now is time to inquire about the Supreme, is now is time to meditate or be absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Is that the reason why Prabhupada sometimes says active meditation, Krishna consciousness?
Yes, 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 applied. Yes, that's a good, you understand. So the meditation is more, because if you're doing something, you have to be thinking, you have to be applying yourself. Right? You have to be applying yourself. Yes, so that's good.
In Russia, you know, there's one of the daughters in Germany, right? They were joking about the daughters of samurais in Russian.
Daughters of?
Samurais.
Samurais.
And I was wondering if the training also defines the application.
The training
defines the application.
Defines the application. I still haven't connected what June or July, Russia, and daughters of samurais had to do with this. You don't understand either. So the point is in these things, take it and move it a step forward till we get to the point of, you know what I'm saying?
In regards to the same question about the
inquiry. Did I mention samurais or Moscow or June or July? What about daughters of samurais in January, February? No? Where are we going with this?
I'm just elaborating on the same question about the inquiry and meditation.
She's elaborating on the inquiring about the meditation, but I don't see where's the, I don't catch the anuman here of what's the connection. We were saying that meditation, the application, means you're applying something. So he was saying like dynamic, you said?
Active meditation.
Active meditation. Just like Krishna consciousness means, what do you call it? You have karma yoga, then you have action in Krishna consciousness, the fifth chapter. So you're taking that activity and then applying it within Krishna consciousness.
That can be passive and active inquiry.
Yes, but what we're talking about is that if the passive inquiry is not going to come to the point of active inquiry where you're going to apply it, then at least in this assembly, it's a waste of time.
I can agree with the way that you talk, but then there's like lazy intelligent.
No, but lazy intelligent means you're getting it done by engaging others in the activity. Active intelligent means I'm doing it myself. Does that make sense? You know, just like Tamal Krishna Maharaj would sit in his room behind his desk. People would come in and see him, and he would be getting things done all over the whole world. Right? very effectively. Yes, Bhavananda would just go out and see it himself. Like, you know what I'm saying? That's the whole difference. We'd be sitting here giving class, and regularly Bhavananda would show up to see who's here, what's happening, what's going on. Well, Tamal Krishnamurti would just hear from, he's heard there's a class, he'd find out who's in the class, then he would inquire from the person who's in the class, and then he would know everything, and then he would send things back the other way. You understand? So that's active intelligence and lazy intelligence. Both very effective. Prabhupada said they were his right and left hand. So they were basically, from what I saw, practical, they were the best managers in the movement.
Yes.
So that's an example of both of those. Not that Bhavananda couldn't sit and do it, he'd rather go out and do it himself because it was quicker. The other one, you have to go through more stages. Yeah, like that. But Bhavananda just go out, I mean, where it's a simple, he'd get someone to do it, but if not, he'd just go see it for himself. Then he would engage people. You know what I'm saying? So that's there, but that's not what we're talking here. Here we're talking about is that you're going to inquire about something. There's a difference between, oh, that sounds interesting, could we hear more about that? But it's just, it titillates the intelligence. It's something new, something fresh, something...
It doesn't.
It's not about applying it. So here then we're talking about the active intelligent means you're going to apply it. Therefore, you have to meditate on it. The whole point is, so what you have to keep here is the central point is meditation. That's the common word here. You understand? So when you take it into lazy and active, it means from here we're saying, because you're meditating, because you're going to apply action, so therefore, and then it gets into there, that lazy intelligent. That. But the point is both have to meditate. The common point is the meditation. You have to catch that thread. Because otherwise, if you just connect words together, you know, means the discussion will have all kinds of interesting points, but it won't be logical.
I'm just trying to frighten my wife. That's why I'm trying to...
Yes, because then here, this discussion, if we don't keep it logical, we won't gain anything from it. This Purana, we go off into tangents, this and that. You see, the Acharyas do that all the time. But they'll all come back, you know? The word dhimahi, we meditate, is in the plural because many different living entities in different times and places and limitless millions of universes meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because it thus affirms that there are many different individual souls. This world refutes the impersonalist theory that everything that exists is only a transformation of the Supreme. Right? So, there's the meditator is using the plural to show that there's unlimited living entities in different universes and different situations, all meditating upon the Supreme. So that means this meditation process or this jigyasa can be done by everyone. There's no one who can't do that. Right? So that's the idea here. And in doing this, then that means it's not just a transformation of the Supreme. No, these living entities exist. They are Brahman. Otherwise, the point is if the illusion is meditating on Brahman, what's the point? So it's only if Brahman is meditating on Brahman, there's a meaning. Right? Just as it will go, it's a matter of quantity of Brahman. There's unlimited Brahman and there's limited Brahman. So when we say Brahman, we're not referring to ourselves because we're the limited Brahman. And then Krishna, he's the unlimited Brahman. And as we pointed out, then Brahman here means the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it means the jiva is meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So, yes.
I still don't understand why. If we say that Brahman transforms, if they say that Brahman transforms,
right,
then it doesn't prove that there are jivas and the impersonal theory. Doesn't it? Prove?
Well, he's not giving details of that here. That will come up later.
Oh, just.
He's just pointing out that it will, because it thus affirms that there are many different individual souls. This word refutes the impersonalist theory, because the impersonalist theory is there's only one soul. So if you say Dhimahi in the singular, then you're saying I meditate and I am that Brahman. Therefore, there's only one, but because the Dhimahi is used in plural, then it means many. And so therefore, then it refutes the idea that everything is one. Right? It means one soul and that's all there is.
Okay.
Yes, no, just somehow there was some, they said one something, there was some Bob Marley there.
Maybe just collage,
like eating their culture, just leave. Yeah, this is meaning the unlimited souls, that's what he's explaining. The unlimited souls and the unlimited universes, therefore, that Brahman, the one Brahman, has transferred into one. Because if you get right into it, some of these things, then if there's only one, then who is that? Who is thinking about all? It means Brahman is thinking about all this, and so it's all here, and everything else is an illusion. Sounds great, as long as you're the one. Because technically speaking, that means somebody here is the one that is there, and everybody else is just part of the dream, the illusion. They don't exist. So, who here is the one?
Everyone.
That's it. Will the real Neo please stand up?
Everyone.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, the problem is there's no... It doesn't support that. That's the point of it. You know, and details of that we'll get later, because it's one of the philosophies that has to deal with it.
Very simple argument, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's plural, it's beyond modest.
Yeah. That's the whole point. When you're dealing logic, it's down to little points like that. Because where's the... that's what you see here. If you noticed in this thing, it's so nicely straightforward. Because why? There's no emotion involved. Like Bhagavatam, then the whole feelings and emotions of everybody, all that's involved. But in here, it's purely just an intellectual understanding. So even though it's really technical, it's actually very easy to deal with, because there's no emotions, there's no feelings in that. It's just intellectual point. This is there, therefore the rest of it goes. Right? That's the whole point that's being given. Does that make sense? Right, because otherwise, up to this moment, we're thinking, "Oh, this is really going to be hard. This is going to be this." Because we dealt with Bhagavatam, there's so many things that are really difficult to deal with. But then here we see it's so easy to deal with, because it's just intellectual. It's just working in the natural, you know, sambandhavide and prayojan. It's not reversing it, going into, you know, attraction, attachment, thinking, feeling, willing, and then acting. But because we're going to apply that like that, then we're going to naturally be thinking about the Supreme and inquire about how to apply this. Right? So we're going to use thinking, feeling, and willing. But the Vedanta doesn't use that. Right? It just shows, here are the facts, here's the application, here's the result. Yes?
Could we say that Vedanta focuses specifically on tattva, and then the Bhagavatam shows how this tattva is applied in rasas?
Yes. You could say it's direct devotional service, direct action, you know, or that action in meditation, like this. So it's applied theory. So this is gives the theory very nicely in its natural intellectual form. Bhagavatam shows how we'll apply it. So because therefore when it applies it, it's individual. That's where then the widest range comes in. Because if you're talking about it, just understanding it from the platform of the soul and intellectual, there's no difference between one living entity and another. There's just one presentation. Right? But when you're dealing with a wide range of living entities because of their different conditionings and all this kind of thing, the application is going to be different. That's where Bhagavatam then excels. It shows how to do that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Yes?
She said that in terms of Srimad Bhagavatam, when you're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, because we're reading the tattva, but we're not like experiencing the rasa because we don't know how it works over there.
Right.
That's why we're like spiritual autists.
Spiritual?
Autists. Like,
spiritual?
Autists.
I did autists.
Like spiritual autists. When we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam,
what's an autist?
Autist? He's a person who is on, like, he's in an environment.
Autist meaning an autistic?
Like the disease.
And, okay, yes, that we only focus on one thing. Don't
yeah,
catch,
because
yeah.
We're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, we can't really know. Like, we're reading it as an information.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay,
like,
yeah, yeah. Okay. So in other words, saying we're all nerds. Okay, yeah. No, that's fair. And then with time, we'll catch the... Yeah, because we see the secondary, we don't catch the primary. Because the point is rasa is tasted on the primary level, not on the secondary. That's the point. We take it that if the secondary is there, you will taste rasa. But it's like, let us say, person has the most amazing security in his house. It's not necessarily he feels secure. You know, say, we're driving down the street in our car, the windows are open, we got our arm out, and you know, like that, and going along, and we're perfectly feeling comfortable. While the rich man is in his bulletproof car with, you know, the guy in the front's got guns, the guy in the back seat's got guns, and he still doesn't feel secure. You know what I'm saying? So it's not environment that creates security.
Paranoia can create everything else.
Yeah, yeah. That's another, but the point is, in other words, when you catch that thing, then those points like that, that is the natural next step in which you will understand it, and it'll bring it to an understanding for yourself. So this expression of that will only be if that will add something to it for everybody else. You understand? So because we're using a dialogue here as the method, that doesn't mean that the dialogue means everything. It means what's going to keep on the theme of what we're discussing. Right? So we don't have a specific that you have to get through a certain amount, you have to spend amount of time or less or so many. Does that make sense? So in other words, hearing that, you'll then calculate in your mind, oh, so that's this. Then it's you've understand the point, but when you say it, then the difficulty comes is there is the chance that you'll take it off into that direction. That becomes the discussion rather than that primary point. So only say the secondary point if it's going to support and keep everyone's focus on the primary. But if it's going to take, you know what I'm saying? Because in your own head, you hear things and, oh, okay, I understand. Rather than, oh, this and that, and yeah, and this and that, and then my grandmother said this and that. But that's your head.
Yeah.
Because the problem is everybody's head's doing that.
Unlimited chances, right?
Yeah, so unless they know your grandmother and this and that, then it won't mean anything to them, but it means something to you. So you have to distinguish between what is part of the discussion for analyzing and understanding this and what is the part of your own Vichar, yeah, your own analyzation within your head. Right? So, and only once you've analyzed, then you can present it. But the thing itself doesn't need to be. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's like, okay, the what do you call it? The inchworm is going from this leaf and then touch to that leaf. When he's touched, then he picks up the back leaves and then he moves on. And then we're going, he puts it on this and that, you know, and then it's like, oh, look at all the spots on the side of the body. Isn't that a cute bug? You know what I'm saying? So, it's not, you know what I'm saying? So, therefore, the point is we're running this that at any time anyone can ask a question, but you have to see that it's like, what do you say? Active? Active?
Active meditation.
That is actually what's going is the progression of the meditation rather than the little things that go along with it.
Stay focused on the topic.
Yeah, on the top, on the primary theme, and then other things come off. And if there's some really good realization like that, that's another thing. But just the thought process should not be. Yes, like that. So that's the point. It's not that no one should ask anything, or it's not that anything goes through your head, it gets discussed. You know what I'm saying? That's why we've already cut out the point of just jigyasu. It's interesting, therefore we ask. No, it has to be on topic. Like that. Does that make sense? Because especially here, we're using the logical progression. So it doesn't have so much time for regression into other things. Because what you're doing is seeing how the logic works, the adhikarana works. Well, in the Bhagavatam, it's how they've applied it. So then other things may come up. He's in that situation, did that, but in this situation it was different. You told this story, it worked out one way, nicely. This story is differently and working out the same. How did these two match? You understand? That, then that inquiry has meaning, because then that will take it to a further level. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, you know, and then Daksha got the goat beard and all that, kind of like that. So did he have the little goatee also? You know, the...
What comb did he use?
Huh?
What comb did he use?
Yeah. You know, did he use one of those little mustache combs? Or, you know, like that. Or, you know, did his wife insist on him shaving? You know, like that. You know, that'd be wild, right? The goat with a shaved face. You know, like, yeah, so, you know, all that kind of stuff like that. You know. His nose might become too prominent also. Yeah. Does that make sense? So in other words, everyone should, if there's something there, inquire, bring something to say, that's okay. Yes.
I think what I'm just trying to understand what you're trying to say, and I think that we have just classes split, and we have Vartan class where we focus on our mind and emotions and feelings in devotional service, and in this class specifically we focus on the intellectual application, just trying to understand that.
Yes, that's what I mean, especially this class. When you're doing the Bhagavatam, because it's that presentation, it can accommodate those, the cultural and things like this. Here it's not so much dealing with the culture, it's just dealing with what's behind, what the culture is based on. Yeah, so if that's caught, then you can apply it into the culture. And the point is that since you're going to apply it, therefore Bhagavatam is actually the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. That's the point. So that was Jiva Goswami's point before. Because you're going to have to apply it, therefore the Bhagavatam will say apply. Like it says, inquire about Supreme. Right? That's what we've only dealt with those two words. But inquire means meditate upon, and Supreme means the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So by meditating on the Supreme Person, that's how we're actually going to come to the transcendental platform. Right? So Bhagavatam shows how to meditate, how to apply, because that active meditation. Yeah? Okay? So, and here? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Salavita Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanand.